kind of want to do also what Greg has. To discuss a few little things that fell through some cracks. And mostly, this should be viewed as a discussion of what happens to the learning equation when you deform the driving term and also the conformal welding. And then I was to get to that. So I should start reviewing the learning equation and the stochastic learning equation. LE is for learning equation, SLE, of course, for the Schramm learning evolution. Should like to say, 10 years ago, everybody was switching to slides, and I would use a blackboard. Now everybody uses computer, and I use slides. So 10 years from now, I'll probably use a computer. All right, so the Zeugner equation is that very simple ODE, the time derivative of a point, so z dot is 2 over z minus w. That gives you a map, the time t max gt of z, that's what it would be. And typically, it is viewed, I should probably look at this pointer. That you take z to be a point in the upper half plane, h, and this function w, the driving term to be a function, well, time is positive, and then a real value function. Usually you make it continuous, and the initial condition you start just with the identity. So you start with a point in the upper half plane, and then it flows according to this equation. So the picture here is this. On the real line, the w is moving back and forth, but if it wouldn't move, if it stood, and points straight above it fall, I mean, they flow straight down. Points on the real line, they flow straight away, and points up here, they flow down and away. And it's very easy to see. I mean, already from this picture tells a lot. That's why I want to spend a minute or so explaining it, because it gives a lot of intuition about how the hulls form and how they look like. So from this picture, you can see right away, it's sort of obvious that very far up, the distance z minus w is very large, so this is large to it, this is small, so you have a slow speed, points move very slowly, and then they pick up, they get infinite speed when they come here. And no point to the side of this line here has a chance of forming that singularity, they just flow away. So then you get two possibilities. So when you fix a point z, then it could happen that the motion of it falls into the singularity, so gt of z equals wt, or it doesn't do that. Yeah. So if it does, then we divide by zero and we stop at that point point z that kill. And well, if it falls in, then that gives me a finite time t sub z, the killing time of the point. You've seen all that. And then you look at the hulls, so the set of points that get killed until time t or before. So the set of all points z is in the upper half plane for which the thing is the most t. So the longer we wait, the better chance for a point is to be killed. So it's obvious that this set is actually increasing with time. And what is not obvious, I mean, after many years, of course, it's you don't appreciate things anymore. But what I still like to point out is that the hull is not empty. It's not totally obvious. I mean, it's a very, very simple exercise, but it's not obvious in the sense that, for instance, it's not true. It's not true in a different setting. So if you look at the Leibniz equation, like a three-dimensional analog, and you have a two-dimensional driving term, then it is possible to have, I mean, you sort of write down the same equation with the same vector field, and you can have the motion move fast enough so that kill any point. I mean, points still flow down from upper half space towards the plane, but you know the singularity escapes fast enough. So some of these things are obvious in a sense, but they are on the other hand also not true. So but we'll see. So then we look. Usually we look at the complement. Maybe I should just show the whole picture here. So the kill set of singularity is moving. It's a growing hull, and the complement of that. So this stuff here is a set which is open. It's connected. It's simply connected, and the time t map is just a conformal map from the complement onto the upper half plane, and it opens up the slits sort of to this line. And all these things are, again, pretty obvious. The main fact here is just that the map, as a function of z, I mean, that function is analytic, which is very, very easy to see. With the initial property here. So let's just then look at one of the most important properties of the Lyman equation, is that scaling property. So if we scale the driving term wt by the Brownian scaling, so we multiply with a factor r squared divided by r, we get a new function w tilde, and the hulls scale with that same Brownian scaling. proof of that is also obvious. I'm sure you have seen that too. You just write down the function here in that form, and you just verify that it satisfies that equation. So there's nothing difficult here, but it's extremely important and useful, and it also motivates and suggests what are the functions or classes of functions you should look at to get interesting scaling invariant objects out of the loop. Then it depends on whether you're living in the stochastic or the deterministic world. So the stochastic world, now you want to have driving terms WT, that's a random function that have that Brownian scaling property, of course, Brownian motions, your prime candidate. So if you take Brownian motion, because of Brownian scaling, then the hulls are scaling invariant, and that's then you get SLE, so you get these random hulls that you're all very familiar with. In the deterministic world, if you just fix one driving term, WT, one function, and you ask yourself, what is the property that is preserved under this Brownian scaling, then of course what comes to your mind is the loop one half, the Hilda continuity. So this property. So take a real value function, if it has a property that the distance between two points T and S under the function is no more than the original distance to the one half factor of the function. So this inequality here, when you rescale it, so when I now write down, so this defines when I take the infimum over t, I take this divided by that, and take the supremum over t and s. So that gives you a norm, the lib one half norm. And then if you rescale your function by this point scaling, of course it does not change the lib one half norm. So that it's invariant. So the whole class lib one half is invariant, and the Brownian scaling norm is invariant. So in a sense, the lip one half is that is the right analog of the Brownian motion that you deal with the deterministic motion. Okay, so then let's briefly recall what we know for these two settings. So in the stochastic world, we know for each fixed kappa. So now if I fix the kappa and then look at this these random hulls, then they are, first of all, they are curves. And for a physicist, the curve is probably something different than for a mathematician. So I should. For me, a curve really is a continuous. I mean, I had discussions with so what I really mean by curve, it's a continuous, it's a path. So there's a continuous function of time t, so that traces out that there's no jumps, no discontinuities. That's what it is. So for each kappa with probability one, these guys are curves. They're not simple curves. When I say simple curve, I really mean one that is that does not have double points, no self-intersections. We have these phases, up to four. We don't have double points. Between four and eight, we have these double points, but still area zero for the curve. So, I mean, the hull would be everything. If a kappa bigger than eight, we get the space for the curves. It does make sense. I mean, it does make sense to speak of these objects. I tend to believe that it's probably better to not ask. I mean, continuity is a difficult question to ask. And many SLE questions, it's not really important that these objects are continuous. But it makes terminology extremely useful if you really speak about it. I mean, you know the answer. Okay, so. So in the deterministic world, we have, and this is a coincidence that I haven't quite fully understood yet, we also have that phase transition. So if the lib one half norm is small, we get a simple curve, and it's not just any continuous curve, but it's a special curve, it's a quasi-conformal image of a line. So they're not very bad. They're like von Hoch snowflakes, so they're not smooth, but they're still sort of well understood, nice curves. But when the norm is allowed to be large, then these things, and they're not even curves anymore. And the sharp bound four here, I didn't give any credit, but this one I should mention here. This one is the sharp bound four that's the zone. We had a better result with some constant here, but four is a sharp. And okay, so now I would like to ask the question, how does the hull vary? So if I fix my driving term, my function with the W, but now I want to deform the function in the simplest way, just by multiplying it with the scaling. So no Brownian scaling, I make the function, in a sense, smoother. I multiply it with a number less than one. And I ask, how does the hull now change? Well, I mean, you would still already in the SLE case, this is not so clear, and that's a question that I put up later. I mean, I would expect that for almost every Brownian path, you know, we fix a Brownian path, for almost every Brownian path, you will get a continuous motion. So you will get a continuously deformed curve that stays a curve all the time, and it is both continuous, basically, in T and R. This I don't
understand.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, I go through SLE kappa, just say I vary kappa. Yeah? So I fix my Brownian realization. And I look at SLE kappa, where kappa now varies. And so I have that picture sort of on my screen. I have that program actually that creates
SLE. This is your realization point.
Yeah. So I fix one sort of point flips, and then I look at the picture. Of course, my kappa zero, it's straight, and when kappa is larger, it's not straight. So if I would move forward with kappa, it gets worse and worse. And I'm not really sure whether this is a very important question, but I certainly like it. I mean, I think it's a good question, interesting question. And you put home that there is some interesting deformation theory. You know, in the quasi-conformal world, this is a very, very important deformation, especially when you allow the factor to be not only real but complex value. In the probabilistic world, I don't really know whether there's a probabilistic lambda lemma or so. Anyway, so in the deterministic world, unfortunately, it is not true that the deformation, when you multiply with a small factor, that it gets better. So in a sense, so we have that little example here with Joan and Don Marshall and I, where we so you look at the space of all driving terms for which the hull is nice, for which you have a continuous curve, and then what we prove is that this space is not convex. So there is a driving term, so when I multiply it with 1/2, I mean, there is a driving term that creates a continuous curve, but when I multiply it with 1/2, I make it nicer, it's not a continuous curve anymore. So if I looked at the movie of that hull, it looks nice, and then the kappa gets smaller and smaller, so in a sense the curve gets smoother and smaller and smoother, but it doesn't even stay continuous at a point anymore. So the precise statement could be reformulations. There is a curve, continuous curve, that is driven by some, and you can do that even in the lib 1/2 category. So let's say we stay within lib 1/2. So here's a lib 1/2 driving term, so that the hull is. Yes, exactly. So, once we are in within 4, then of course, I mean, then we are safe again. Then it's trivial in the lib 1/2. It's the same phenomenon, of course, as you know, with the univalence criteria. Yeah? So if you have a Schwarzian norm less than, every conformal has Schwarzian norm less than 6, but only less than 2 gives you univalence. And there are univalent functions. Unfortunately, that's why Brennan is low. I mean, one of the many reasons. If it would be convex, then Brennan would be trivial everything. But here not. I mean, this has no deep connection to any deep problems. It's just a curious thing. I'd like to mention that you'll see that it's not really cheating. I mean, it's true and it's correct, but here I'm in the by curve. I don't mean simple curve here. And so to get the simple, I was with Ilya Binder. We have had some ideas that still need a little bit of work to have that true also in the simple. So let me just show.
No, it's not known for simple curve.
Well, I think it's false. I mean, it's the same result. But before I can put in here simple, I think I really have to. Simples. There are two simple, most simple cases of this one. Just a square root function. If you just take square root of t, it's very easy to see by some sort of self-similarity argument that the hulls are lines. If you take, you run into the singularity, square root 1 minus t, then it is still in a sense a line, but you can't see it. So then you get a picture like this. So the driving function is kappa times a square root 1 minus t. T goes only between 0 and 1. After 1, you could do whatever you want to. For instance, spirals down logarithmically. When you zoom in, it really becomes self-similar at that point. That's simple curve. When lambda equals 4, that thing doesn't stay in lambda half day anymore. It hits back on the real line and it makes important figures. It makes a zero angle. And when kappa gets larger and larger, that thing just stays the same. So the curve hits back on the real line, but not an angle gets larger. Kappa goes to infinity. This example, which is familiar to you, but so here is a compact that is it's a curve probably for many people, but for many people, this is not a curve anymore. So it's a curve that goes like this, and it spirals infinitely many times around the disk in the middle. And it doesn't have to be a disk; it's any object you want to do. It's just some infinite spiral. So one way to think of this is you just take such a spiral that ends at a point and just blow up that point to take a homomorphism from the punctured plane to the plane minus a disk. So that really blows it up and makes an infinite turn then around. What we plan here is so that's basically the heart of the counter example, which is this function. I mean, basically it's the same driving function as this plane. Moreover, is that this is also very easy. Let's convince you that this thing has a driving function which just behaves like square root of the 4 times square root of this t. So if we zoom in, so I put a magnifying, so I stop this after 1 zillion turns, and I'm right here now, and I just magnify with a strong magnifying glass. And what do I see? I don't see all these previous turns, I just see the last turn, which is this line here. And the very last part of the curve, which now comes back very, very far out over there, and they bend around. Yeah, but this is conformally, this is what I really see. The point out here, infinity, is where I have to go all the way back, which means going out of that tunnel very far away. And the future of the curve, so what comes, the next zillion of turns, they just kind of go parallel along this line. So this is the future. So that's how it looks like. That's what a zero angle is. So then when I formally map this slit half plane here to the full half plane, the rest of the curve gets mapped to something like this, and it just happens, you can compute the curve you get here exactly. I mean, it's not only proxy, it's exactly this curve. So the driving, I mean, sort of the remainder of the driving term, so that's what the Newton equation is. By time t, this is all disappeared, you're under setting, the rest gives you the remaining increment wt. So if this is not quite yet in the limit, then this is only very, very close, and this is only very, very close. But now what happens is if r is larger than 1, so if we take a factor bigger than 1 and multiply this one, then we're in the setting of the previous setting here. So like if r is 2, I'm going to 8 times. So now my curve actually, this one makes only a few turns and then it hits back upon itself in a different angle. So now it's continuing. So the way you should think of it is as you actually, when you take this function here from that curve and uniform, you would see actually a very similar picture to that one. You start out with a nice, for small norm, it's a nice logarithmic spiral. And as the norm increases, it gets closer to touching back on itself. At the critical kappa equals 4, just a funny thing, then it resolves into 1. Alright, that's what I say here. I think the conjecture I mentioned before, but SLE, that should not happen. I mean, you can imagine that's a very, very specific, a very non-random thing, so in SLE, we don't have a lot of information in the way about this is happening. Questions so far? All right, so that is that.
What do you think doesn't happen with this corresponding conjecture?
Well, so what does not happen for this? So if I fix one Brownian realization, I mean one Brownian, for almost every function b sub t, as I vary kappa, so now I look at the house k depending on kappa. And of course, let's fix t for every kappa, there is an exceptional set of measure zero, but there aren't going to be many, and blah, blah, blah. So that's all right, so then once we are deforming the plane with the kappa and let it move, could also ask, why not just make it even complex value? So that's my next. Well, in a sense, this is exactly, I think it is instructive. So that should be the behavior. I mean, when kappa goes to 4, at kappa equals 4, you almost have these self-touching, but you don't quite. I mean, it's almost a miracle. It could have gone either way. Somehow somebody wanted that. Basically, they do have these almost close. So that's why it would be much harder, of course, to prove it. I think if there is the real difficulty is not yet coming. Even there, you know, I mean, you see, this is a really pathological, I mean, it needs a lot of. And here, I mean, I haven't thought too much about it. All right, but so now I would still like to deform the kappas, but now here's a mini project with Odette, and for some reason we were wondering what happens if we make the kappa actually complex value. And so what should we mean by that? Now we think of the driving term, just write it this way, square root kappa times bt, which is of kappa making it, maybe we should have stuck an e to the I theta in here and then make it a theta over 2, but let's just write it like this. So we put some rotation also to the driving term, which just means, so we fix a direction theta, which is this line here, and we have our W moving along that line. And basically we want to keep the equation. So I just write down the Loebner equation, the time derivative of gt is 2 over gt minus, so it's the very same equation within it. Starting with an identity. And now it does not make sense anymore to restrict yourself to the half plane. Now we should just look at any starting point, let's say on the sphere, and see what happens. And, still, if W is at some position at some point, the vector field looks like it's still the same. I mean, it's the same field here. So right above it, so along the vertical line, we have that sort of attraction, and along the horizontal direction, we have the repulsion. So that's what the
vertical relative to the new direction.
Well, let's say at any instance, yeah. I mean, now that point is, of course, allowed to move, but at And then let's just see what we still retain. I mean, first of all, I mean, at least it does make some sense. It's an ODE, so I can just run it, and I have no problem unless I divide by zero. It's just an ODE, so. At the time tz, so we still define the killing time where this thing is zero. It's finite or infinite, and then I look at the point of the Hall k sub t of points that get killed until time t, and I look at the complementary set, and it is still almost obvious that I mean it's the same thing, that this time t map gt is a conformal map from the set of still alive points to its image, just because this function is analytically the variable. And it still it has a hydrodynamic normalization, so you can still see easily that the hull is empty, for instance. We would just find the image hull k prime to be the sphere minus, I mean, to the set that is not there on the image side. So let me just, so here I want to produce pictures, but I don't have any. You're right. This would make sense for any WG, but it would sort of, it's a little bit curious, maybe it's just this little thingy. So now we should view that as a pair of sets. So we have the K on the one set, on the one side, the set of points that get killed, and then on the image, sort of the complement of what's along. So when I have that kappa, so when that angle is zero, so in the classical case, then what we have, of course, on the one side, we have the SLE, and on the other side, we have that removed slip. So what I want to say, the Loebner equation gives us usually we draw it only, you draw the half plane here, and then you have a half plane minus a slit to complement to the half plane, but it extends basically the complement of that, so we get a conformer from the complement of that plane to the complement of a line. That's how we could view SLE for real kappas. And while we, I mean, there, because that's boring, it's just a line segment, but so we focus on that segment, that pair of sets together with a conformer in between. That's the case when theta is real. When the theta is, when the direction is vertical, then the rows actually shift. Yeah, so now the interesting action happens on that side here, and my hull on the pre-image side is just a boring line segment. And the reason for that is, I mean, we can compute, of course, easily, but you see it from that. I mean, you see it from this picture. I mean, if this is my line where the W can move, and it only attracts points anyway from the opposite, so it cannot attract points off that vertical line, they just flow away. They cannot get killed at all. So on that side, we will definitely get just a line segment. And here, the flow, the map, the inverse map, is basically just the time reversal of this one. So the time reversal puts in a negative sign here, and the negative sign just reverses all these arrows. So on that side, we just have the reversed flow. So it's just a rotation of the SLE. Then an even more curious, maybe that's a more interesting one, is when we have a motion along the diagonal, then both sets are actually, I mean, they're not the same, but they have the same distribution. So we get a random set here, we get a random set here, and the follow map between these two sets is that sort of SLE. And both coordinates individually, they have the same distribution, except for the some symmetry, some reflection in the off diagonal. So if I take this set here reflected in the diagonal, I get another random set of And well, we still have all the basic, I mean, not all, but some of the basic properties. For instance, that Brownian scaling, that is trivial, that little one line that I wrote down, but it's still all valid. So these complex structures still have the Brownian scaling property, so they're still sort of self-similar. All right, so that is, definition is useful or not, it's not so clear.
Have you looked at the case where the phase is dynamical?
Yeah, so exactly. Maybe I'll just put up one slide. I mean, here just explain that it's what I said in words, that the second hull is just the sort of the time reversal. We have only some numerical at this point. We just look at, you know, that's the next question. We look at phases. So let's look at some sort of Mandelbrot sensor. What is the parameters kappa for which the area is zero? Asking whether we have curves is much more delicate. So this is what we're doing. But just area zero would be so the real kappa, that's the easy between zero and four, negative four and four, we have negative zero now. Here it seems actually interesting. So here that Mandelbrot sensor does not seem to be starlight. So if we take other directions, it could be area zero for a while, and it's probably area zero. But at this point, I think all I should say is that this is still computer based. And the way you could do that is, of course, you want these patients. You look at the diffusion, so it's a center, so you write things down in the polar coordinates, and you view it as a cylinder. And you see, of course, that because of the scaling invariance, the angle is sort of really what matters. So there's the rail. And you can try to compute the stationary measure for the angle. And there you get a piece of this. Then you have, then the density for that stationary measure for the angles, that would just satisfy some differential equation that we have to solve. But at this point, we have only a sort of numerical solutions. And then if you integrate the drift radial component against the stationary measure, that will tell you if that is positive, then you sort of go up on the cylinder, you will go to infinity. If it's negative, you go to zero. And this
when we can get to somebody.
Yeah, so we have looked at it, but not, you know, no.
So I think this is interesting enough to merit some further investigation. Yeah, of course, I mean, that's interesting, but I'm not sure if it really is. Here there still is the hope that it's, I mean, still somehow I would feel like you could hope that there is still some sort of automatic motion going on there. Because you can take any continuous functions in the group. Well, not in the strict sense, definitely not. Or you can see, you know, the nicest cabin. If there is some, I mean, I would expect that there is some sort of phenomenon, but I don't know. Something that you fortunately. And it gets worse. I think it is, I'm not 100% sure, but even for these guys, I guess it is possible that the hull is always going to be connected, but now it's quite important to say the hull is not a full company. All right, so let's move on. There was one more little I don't know how to call it, a gap in the literature, maybe you could call it, that I would quickly like to fix. This is this. The reversibility. So for kappa less than 8, SLD kappa is believed to be reversible. But this is a proof for case kappa up to 4. For kappa bigger than 8, it is known that SLE kappa is not reversible, but there is no proof in the literature. So we have a little argument here now. And so what does it mean that reversibility and non-reversibility SLE? So you have a simply connected domain and with two marked boundary points A and B, SLE creates a curve from A to B. So you get this SLE kappa curve from A to B and G. And you could do the same thing, running a curve from B to A and G with a process. And reversibility would mean that they have the same law. Non-reversibility means they're not the same. So you're the claim that when kappa is bigger than A, the curve from here to here is not the same as the curve from here to here. And, yes, for 8, it's one of the very few cases where it's actually known, because you have a discrete model.
Yeah,
exactly, and for the lattice model, you can see it, and then you can pass to the limit. So 8, there it is true. And so let me just very, very briefly just sketch the... No, it really means, I mean, the whole curve as a... Well, yeah, so let's say modulo their time parameterization. So now you just you view two curves as identical if one has a if you know there's a homomorphism of the time interval. You can reparameterize. Yeah, but the natural parameterizations are the ones that don't mesh. I mean, when you grow it from down here, it's a sort of the capacity, the size from the beginning, whereas the other parameterization is the size from the end, and they have no nothing to do with each other. I mean, the easiest way to phrase that is actually, I mean, would be probably this. I mean, you just take a conformal map of the domain. Let's say it's a half plane anyway, so this is zero and this is infinity. And then, so we take SLE from zero to infinity. That's the one that you know anyway. And now, I take an automorphism, just the one over z that interchanges zero to infinity, and I apply that to my curve. And so I get a new curve. I have these two curves, the original one, and now the one over z one. And I have to, but now I have to run it sort of backwards. I don't know how it would start at infinity. I run it from, reparameterize it, it goes from zero to infinity, and I have to change its own plot also. Then reversibility would mean that I can change the, reparameterize the one over z curve. Okay. Yeah, but the problem is in that setting for kappa bigger than a, the trace is the whole plane. It's space filling. It's a piano curve, so it fills out the whole half plane. So in that sense, of course, it's reversible. it's the half plane. Say again. That's exactly sort of the. Let me just, I mean, show what it looks like. So I guess maybe I just skip. So what I want to say here is if we have that reversibility, if we had reversibility, then this would be true. So we pick a point z in somewhere in upper half plane, and look at the time when it gets killed. So. When kappa is less than 8, it could happen. You know, when kappa is less than 4, the points don't get killed. Yeah. So then it's not interesting. When kappa is between 4 and 8, they all get killed, but they could get killed at the same time. Yeah, but when kappa is bigger than 8, then they will get killed at different times. Because it really is, I mean, it doesn't swallow a whole blob. It really visits one point at a time. And so now if it is reversible, then you have that sort of symmetry, that the probability of symmetry with respect to the circle here, reflection of the circle. So the probability that a point Z gets killed before 1 is basically when you reflect it, that gives you a reflected point Z star. So it gives you the probability that Z star gets killed when you come from infinity first, gets killed before 1. But if you look at the probability killed before 1, so I want to say what you see here, the probability that Z gets killed before 1 is 1 minus the probability that the reflected point gets killed before 1. Z star is a reflection in the unit circle. Yeah, so not through each point. So this is that little lemma that I've wrote up here before. So it is, and that's crucial here, of course, for the whole thing. So if I take a point in the upper half plane, then with probability 1, that point is hit exactly once. Okay. The problem is, you're right, to draw a space-filling curve, it really, I mean, it has to. I mean, you draw it, and so you have a blob here at time 1. And then the curve needs to go back and visit, so all the points in the boundary of that hull are going to be visited again. So there are many, many points that will be visited again. But the typical point, if you fix a point, that is just going to be hit only once. And the reason for that is also very easy, because you know at time zero, I mean, you have your hull, and I mean you fix your point, and then you map the complement of the hull down to zero. So now you just need to see that at zero, when you start the essay, that zero gets sort of surrounded right away. So there's a little neighborhood of it that belongs to the hull, so you cannot get back to it.
These things are a little bit, yeah, I mean, that is... Well, maybe I should just cut this whole thing a bit.
No, double points don't matter. I mean, the double points are not responsible for the phenomenon here. At below 8, you also have double points, many double points. Right? Yeah, but here also, the area of the double, well, this I don't know. I haven't thought about it. I would think the area of the double point is zero.
Is it?
Sure. Okay, let's leave that for afterwards. Okay, that's a good discussion for dinner. Let's. once you fix a point, at least, it is not a double point with probability one. Yeah. So a quick Fubini argument would say, right? But then others, I mean, let's figure that out later. Okay, all I wanted to... So we know if it is reversible, we will have that property here. But so we could just compute the probability and then see that it is not symmetric, and we are done. The computation, how to compute this probability is standard, that it doesn't work when kappa is bigger than 8. So the bottom line is, I don't know how to compute this. Well, killed first, then this denominator goes to zero, and so the quotient goes to infinity if one gets killed first. And it's possible that both get killed at the same time, that is given to the equation. So if you want to look at that quotient, you just do your Eco formula, so you compute the E, and so you get something, and then you do the usual thing, so you can try to find a function F, so that F of QS is a local martingale. So it gives you the generator of that diffusion effect, that F has to be equal to zero. So you get this here gives you F times F prime, plus this squared F 1/2, F double prime should be equal to zero, so you get a differential equation for F. That's the usual thing, you solve it, you get the type of elementary function. Then it's basically it's a Cauchy formula. And actually, the probability is sort of the barycentric Nicolian. So, if you want to know probability that the point C gets killed before 1, so just map Z over by this map F, get something in the triangle. The coordinates of that point with respect to this three, I don't give you the probabilities before. But when kappa is bigger than 8, it's not another triangle. I mean, then these angles here get bigger than. I still wanted to say something about the conformal weldings. So before I move on, is there any questions here? Okay, so then the weldings. Kari already mentioned yesterday, so here we have a very quick iteration. Conformal welding is, so what was it? We have a homeomorphism from a circle to a circle, say. And so it's a rule, think of a rule on how to glue two hemispheres. So you get a topological sphere, you apply uniformization theorem, so you get a real sphere, and the cutting circle now becomes a curve gamma. Whether that makes sense or not is a... But here is a way how to make sense of it if you try to find like an atlas. So you find a conformal map from the upper half to the upper half here, from the lower half to the lower half, the conformals F plus and F minus, and they have to glue together along this cut. So with F plus here should be the same as first going over with a phi and then going with F minus. They should coincide on the circle. So that's the welding problem. And
I think it's a very, very important. I mean, of course, complex analysts have been studying that for a long, long time, for many different angles. That shapes random shapes business. I think it's one already by the sort of analogy with the Leuven equation. The Leuven equation you can view as, you know, you have that curve gamma, and the Leuven equation encodes the information of that curve into a real, a one-dimensional function, W, the driving term. And the Whirling does the same in a sense. You have that curve gamma, and it encodes all the information about the curve gamma into a one-dimensional thing, a homomorphism of the circle. So it's a very similar process, and there is more analogy than just that. There's a slight catch to that. The correspondence, the curve corresponding to the driving term, Leuven equation, that works always forward and backwards. You take a curve, you get the driving term W, you stick the W in the Leuven equation, you get back to the gamma. That always works. It's one way. With the Whirling, it's not quite true, but in the important cases, like in SLE, it is still true. So there are examples of curves. I guess you should say there is Whirling homomorphisms which have more than one solution curve gamma. There is Whirling homomorphisms which have no solution curve gamma. But in the SLE setting, which is maybe the one that is interesting for us, mostly. So then SLE, we should probably view like this. If we have that slit half plane and we map it conformally, so we get the two sides, the left and the right, that are gluing by some homomorphism. The homomorphism is just one point on the curve, it corresponds to two here. So it tells you the rule how to do these two points. And it follows a lot of slides here. Actually, so I wanted to explain an algorithm. There's a very elegant algorithm how to simple and fast converging how to solve the Whirling problem. Can you explain how to use a Beltrami equation to solve it? Homomorphisms coming from sort of a dyadic decomposition where you take the unit interval and then the two halves get down to the intervals of total length 1, but you make length p and 1 minus p. Each now subinterval of length 1 half gets split up, p, 1 minus p. Keep doing that independently. Then you throw in a parameter kappa. So,
just reiterate what Kali said.
Equation with that mu upper half plane to zero and the lower half plane, and that problem has a unique homomorphic solution, and there's a curve that
solves a Whirling problem. So, one more minute, let me just say we have to find an extension. So here's a very quick run through. There are many extensions that was already asked before. There is some very natural extension. Invariant extension, but there is an easy one, which is a geometric one due to Jerris and Koenig. So if you have a homomorphism from the real line to the real line, then we can extend it in a piecewise linear way just by taking dyadic intervals, and then you take dyadic points, you're sort of sitting right above each interval, you compute the image of such an interval, and so you go from the interval to the image interval, and you draw like a rectangular triangle above it, so that gives you an image of these points, images of dyadic points. Then if you sort of triangulate here like this, and so here you have the corresponding triangles, and you just just taken the fine map that maps each triangle to the corresponding, that gives you a piecewise linear extension. And its k, so its dilatation, this corresponds to the distortion of the sizes of adjacent intervals. Then you can compute for the SLE weldings that they have a k which decays sort of polynomial, like 1 over t and some power bigger than 1. And so in particular, then the area of where the dilatation is large for SLE behaves, it decays polynomially. But for the machinery that Curry explained, you need exponential decay in order to have unique solutions. So we need an exponential decay, so that's not good enough. But then there is, and this is Peter's observation, that you get those conditions in this field. So here is part of the problem with Curry and Miro and Jerry. It's the following model. So now we want to look at a random QC map where the Beltrami coefficient is like in this thing here. It should be constant anyway, or we think of it as being constant in these hyperbolic cubes. Draw hyperbolic cubes with the decomposition and pick a random k in each of these cubes. And you're free to pick the random sort of whatever you want. There's only two conditions that say there should be. The mu can even have some argument, but the absolute value of the implication, the constant in each cube, this should be independent, and this should have finite information. Then it follows that even more, so then you get the domains have that same property as SLE curves have. It's not only curves, but the domain doesn't have very bad bottom dimensions. So they have sort of zero angle, but in many ways that they don't have zero angle. Only the analyst can anyway perform what is the best for welded to each other. You have to let the Leuven equation run, and then if they fall into the singularity at the same time, then they're welded together. If not, they're not. If you change kappa, there's no reason they won't.
But somehow, a posteriori, if it's all true, then.
No, I don't believe that. I mean, the Leuven equation, that's the problem. The Leuven equation still has time t in it, sort of one point spin field, but the welding has. Yeah, of course. I mean, if you could characterize the SLE welding, then you're right. There should be a natural.